Who are the real people we consider our sages? Who were they in life? What is the legacy they left us? Join Rabbi Danny Sackstein for the next hour as he explores the lives of our Torah giants, the spiritual geniuses who shaped the way we approach Judaism today. That's Focus on Our Sages right now on 101.9 Chai FM.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Soul to Soul. Great to be with you on this rainy and wet Wednesday afternoon. We've had so much rain, Baruch Hashem, here in Joburg. It seems like it hasn't stopped raining since Sunday. And the rain is a siman bracha, and Baruch Hashem, we welcome the rain. Today is the 21st day of the month of Shvat, the 19th of February, 2025. Today, the 21st of Shvat, is the anniversary 78 years ago, in 1948, when a car bomb exploded in front of the Palestine Post, which later became the Jerusalem Post, in Jerusalem. A stolen British police pickup loaded with half a ton of TNT pulled up in front of the Post building. 5 minutes later, a second car pulled up. Its driver lit the fuse and drove away. Three people were killed and dozens injured. The bomb destroyed the printing press. Its aim was to stop the growing international influence of Jerusalem's only English-language newspaper. Further, since most Israeli newspapers were published in Tel Aviv, the Post was the only source of news in Jerusalem during the Arab siege. The bombing was perpetrated by the Arab militia, assisted by former British soldiers. As an act of ultimate defiance, the Post published an edition the next morning, albeit reduced in size to 2 pages. Arab violence intensified leading up to Israel's independence. A few weeks later, 3 trucks carrying explosives blew up on Jerusalem's Ben Yehuda Street, destroying buildings and killing 56 Jews. 2 weeks later, another car bomb blew up at the Jewish Agency building in Jerusalem, killing 13 people. So Arab terrorism against Jews in Israel is nothing new. And as we all know, it's something very real and always has been present. The Arabs opposing our returning to our homeland and Jews being in the land of Israel. The view of the Arab world, of the Muslim world, is a land that was once controlled by Muslims cannot possibly be controlled by infidels, be controlled by Jews. That's an insult to Islam. That's an insult to the Muslim world. And so the Muslim world will do all they can to wage the jihad against the Jews and against Jewish control in the land of Israel. Unfortunately, that is a reality that we all have to accept, and we have to face the reality accordingly and protect ourselves and protect our people and protect the life of Jews in the land of Israel. And as soon as we lower our guards and as soon as we enter into a false sense of security and become complacent, so the jihad rears its ugly head once more and attacks and brutally and savagely murders Jews, as we saw on October 7th in 2023. And so it's very important as Jews that we understand this reality. That is the reality. Ask any Muslim, ask any person who follows Islam, that is a tenet of Islam. A land controlled by Muslims cannot be controlled by infidels, as is the case in the land of Israel. And so the jihad will continue and won't stop, no matter what we do, no matter what we offer. As our history has shown, we've offered everything. We've offered independence. We gave Gaza back unilaterally in 2005, complete independence. The Arabs had in Gaza. They controlled it completely. Israel had some sort of security concerns and tried to prevent arms coming in. But otherwise, the Palestinians had complete autonomy. They voted Hamas into power. Hamas used the billions of dollars of international aid given to build up the lives of the Palestinian people. They used that for tunnels. They used that for arms. And they built a formidable army which carried out its operations on October 7th. So it's important as Jews that we face that reality and we deal with it accordingly. Okay, so that's the anniversary today, 7, 8 years ago, where a car bomb blew up the Palestine Post. But let's move on to tomorrow. Tomorrow is the 22nd of Shvat. And the 22nd of Shvat is also an important day because it is the Yahrzeit of the Kotzke Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Kotzk, who was born in Poland in 1787. He died in 1859. And he was the great Hasidic leader known as the Kotzke Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Kotzk. So tonight and tomorrow are his Yahrzeit. He was said to be completely uncompromising in the quest for faith, honesty, and truth. He abhorred rote piety and taught his followers that they must renew their quest for self-knowledge and truth on a daily basis. He's known for his sharp wit and catchy phrases. For example, he said, "Where is God? Wherever you let him in." The Kotzke Rebbe was legendary in his pursuit of truth and holiness. He was the precursor to the Gera Hasidim. So first it was the Rebbe of the Kotzke Rebbe was Rav Simcha Bunim of Peshitsa. After Rav Simcha Bunim passed away, so the Kotzke took over. And after the Kotzke passed away, so the Chidush HaArim took over that group of Hasidim, and it became known as the Gera Hasidim. And was then taken over by the Chidush HaArim's grandson, the Sfas Emes, and then the Imre Emes, who survived the Shoah and went to Eretz Yisrael and built Ger into the largest group of Hasidim in Eretz Yisrael and in the world. But much of Ger follows the direction that was laid out by the great and holy Kotzke Rebbe, whose Yahrzeit it is today. Tonight and tomorrow. We then move on to the 23rd of Shvat, which is Thursday night, Friday. And on the 23rd of Shvat in 1918, the Jewish Legion left England to join the Allies in liberating Palestine from the Turks. 4 years earlier, Zev Jabotinsky had proposed that the Jewish Legion be formed, but the British resisted the idea of Jewish volunteers fighting on the Palestinian front. This led instead to the establishment of the Zion Mule Corps. Meanwhile, Jabotinsky pursued his project of a Jewish legion, which was eventually designated as the 38th Battalion of the Royal Fusiliers. It included British volunteers, members of the former Zion Mule Corps, a large number of Russian Jews, and later joined by a large number of American volunteers. A few years later, the Jewish Legion was demobilized by the anti-Zionist British military administration, yet it would be remembered as the first organization of Jewish fighters since Roman times, a precursor to the Israel Defense Forces, the IDF. So on Friday, the 23rd of Shvat, in 1918, they left England to join the Allies in liberating Palestine from the Turkish Empire after World War I. I also wanted to mention that this coming Shabbos is the 24th of Shvat, and the 24th of Shvat is actually a anniversary of Zechariah HaNavi's prophecy. So on the 24th of Shvat in the year 353, before the Common Era, the prophet Zechariah delivered his second prophecy to the Jewish nation. The prophecy contained 8 mysterious visions that symbolized the history of the Jewish people. These allegorical prophecies were a message from God to Zechariah to remind the people of their history so that they would learn from their mistakes and not repeat them in the future. Zechariah was among the Nevi'im, the prophets, who escorted the Jewish people back to Jerusalem after their 70 years of exile in Babylonia, which became Persia. He admonished the people for not acting with more alacrity to build the Beis HaMikdash. The construction of the Beis HaMikdash had begun 59 years before this, and it would take 4 years to complete. The book of Zechariah is the second to last of the Nevi'im section of the Torah, and he was of the last Nevi'im to communicate God's will to Israel before the end of the prophetic era. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you're having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic offers a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care, find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside. Dis-Chem Pharmacies, better health starts here. So we're transitioning from the reading of the parsha that deals with the receiving of the Torah, Kabbalah, the Torah, Parshas Yisro, that we read last Shabbos. And this coming Shabbos, we read Parshas Mishpatim. And Mishpatim deals with the civil laws of the Jewish people, the laws of property, the laws of damages, the laws of respecting another human being and their property. And the parsha starts out with the pasuk, "Ve'ele ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifnehem." These are the civil laws that are placed in front of them. And Rashi comments on the words. Usually "ele" means it's a new subject matter being introduced. "Ve'ele" connects us to the previous parsha. So Rashi says, "Ma rishonim misinai." The "Ve'ele" is telling us, just as the previous laws came from Mount Sinai, af elu misina, so to these laws, these civil laws, are also from God. They were taught to the people at Mount Sinai. So the question is, what is Rashi teaching us? What's the chiddush over here? What is he saying that we didn't know already? And usually what we would think is that these civil laws are logical laws. They are the conclusions that a straight-thinking person would reach, in that a person has to be kind, a person has to be honest, a person has to be a mensch. That's logical. But Rashi is telling us that these civil laws from the Torah go beyond that. They supersede just what a nice, good person would do. And actually, they are laws from God. And they come from Mount Sinai, and they're part of a higher legal system, and not just what a person would think is necessary to be a nice and good person. The Midrash Rabbah, the very first Midrash that we have in Midrash Rabbah and Bereishis, says that when a king is building a palace, so the king has to consult the contractors, he consults the engineers, he consults the architects, and they come up with a plan. They draw up a plan, a blueprint. And the Zohar extends on this idea and says that when Hashem built this world, so Hashem took as the blueprint for this world the Torah. As the Zohar says, Histakel b'oraisa, that God looked into the Torah, ubare alma, and God created the world. So it's an amazing concept, this. It's not that human beings are, the Torah is a reaction to human nature, but it's the other way around. The Torah came first. The Torah is the blueprint. And human nature is designed based on the Torah itself. Since the Torah says we should do certain things and we shouldn't do certain things, so the human being, the model of a human being, is based on that blueprint of the Torah, which is quite an incredible thing. So the Torah is the basis of kindness. The Torah is the basis of being honest. And interestingly enough, Rabbi Ashavai says that's why Pirkei Avos, the ethics of the fathers, it appears in the middle of Maseches Mezikin. We would think maybe it would come at the beginning of the Torah and tell us about the ethical teachings of the Torah. No, beginning of Torah Shabbat Peh. It's right in the middle of Mezikin to tell us that these laws, the ethics that the Torah teaches, are an essential part of the civil law, and they come from Hashem, they come from Mount Sinai. And he says, Rabbi Weiss, that that's why Nezikin is the Masechta that teaches us the chain of transmission. How does Pirkei Avos start? Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, or Mosar l'Yoshua z'zakein, z'zakein l'anshei Knesset Gedola, teaches us the chain of transmission, to tell us that the ethical laws of the Torah are not man-made. They supersede the ability of a man's intellect to fathom, and they actually come from God. They're godly laws. So let me give you an example of such a godly law. The Torah teaches us in this week's Parsha about the mitzvah, the commandment to help a person unload their donkey. So it might sound like something that's like random and a little bit dated for the modern world, because today we don't transport our goods on a donkey. But for many, many centuries, that's how it was before we had modern society and motor vehicles, which are such a great convenience for us. So the mitzvah of prika, of unloading the donkey, is a mitzvah to help somebody unload their donkey. And there's a mitzvah that's called te'ina, to help somebody load a donkey. Which one, if you see two people and one needs help unloading, one needs help loading, so you should first help the person to unload. Why? Because not only are you helping that person, but you're also helping the animal. And tsar bala chaim doraisa, the suffering that an animal is experiencing is a doraisa, to alleviate, is a Torah commandment to alleviate the suffering of animals. So therefore, by helping unload, you're helping the person and you're helping the animal. So that's got two mitzvahs versus the one mitzvah of tina. However, the Gemara says an amazing thing. The Gemara says that when it comes to you seeing in front of you your friend and your enemy, your friend needs help in unloading his donkey, and your enemy needs help in loading the donkey. So which one should you help? So we would think, well, because unloading's got two mitzvahs, you're helping your friend and you alleviating the pain of the animal, so unloading is better. The Gemara says no. The halacha is that you have to help your enemy load. So even though the loading is less of a mitzvah than the unloading, but because you're helping somebody that you don't like, your enemy, so you're being koyvesh yitzro, you're overcoming your inclination. And that's of more value to the growth of a human being than unloading the animal. So we would have thought otherwise, but you see how the Torah, in that sensitivity and understanding of human nature, tells us that we should rather help our enemy, because we don't want to help our enemy. So who's the enemy? The Tosfos discusses who is an enemy. It's somebody that you dislike for good reasons, but then because you dislike him, he dislikes you. And so it's built a negative relationship. But you need to overcome your own bias and help the person that you don't want to help. So that's an example of how the civil laws in the Torah supersede what we would think and actually sink into the personality of a human and help us develop and grow. Where in the Torah does it say that we have to overcome our inclinations? So it's not a particular mitzvah in the Torah, but Rabbi Chaim Vital says that really is the foundation and underpinning of the entire Torah. That's Kol HaTorah Kulo, is in order to help a person develop and grow and overcome their lower part and build their character, build our midas. That's what Rabbi Chaim Vital says. So therefore, that is an overriding principle which would then require of the person to help their enemy load rather than their friend to unload. So that's an example of the wisdom in the depth of the Torah and of the civil laws in the Torah. And as the Ramban says, so there's two aspects to our observance of Hashem. We have the mitzvahs bein Adam lemakom and bein Adam lechaveiro. The mitzvahs bein Adam lemakom are between us and God, between Adam lechaveiro is between us and our fellow human beings, but they are equally important. They have equal significance. And that's why the Ten Commandments are given on two tablets. The first five are between us and God. The second five are between us and our fellow man. And they're exactly equal. They're exactly equal in size. They're the same texture, to show us that they're equally important, that the spiritual world of a Jew is built on these two pillars, our relationship with God and our relationship with our fellow human being. And those ethical laws that govern our relationship with our fellow human being also come from Mount Sinai. They also are a higher spiritual framework that God gives to us. And that's what Parshas Mishpatim is, and that's what Rashi is telling us, that these two also come from Mount Sinai. They're part of God's laws, which is a very beautiful and powerful teaching that we see from this week's Parsha. So let's continue. There are some important and beautiful ideas that we saw in last week's Parsha, in Parshas Yisroel. And the first one I'd like to share with you is a very beautiful insight of the Nesiv Shalom. So we spoke about tonight and tomorrow being the Yotzeit of the Kotz Gerebi, one of the great Hasidic rabbis of our generation is the Slonim Rebbe, the Nesivo Shalom. And he's got such a beautiful insight that he shares with regards to last week's parsha. So last week's parsha, as I discussed, was Kabbalah HaTorah, was the cataclysmic event that changed the history of humanity forever, the one single time in the history of the world where the creator of the world, the creator of the universe, God, revealed himself not to one person, as the other nations claim, that a single individual had a revelation. But the Jews have the chutzpah to say, our revelation is a true revelation. Why should I believe one person? Any person could make up anything. But when there's a revelation to a nation, to 3 million people, that you can't make up. Because if you say God appeared to 3 million people, so people in the nation would say, well, my great-grandfather was there. He didn't say anything about it. So you can't make that up. To make that claim means it must be true. And since that claim is still believed by the majority of human beings in this world today, majority of people believe that God appeared to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai. They just say things changed later. Christians say that there was a New Testament. The Muslims say that Muhammad was also a prophet and changed it. But none of them contest the event of Mount Sinai, Mount Har Sinai, that the Jewish people received through, which is an amazing thing. So God appears to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai. And in preparation for that incredible event, the Torah tells us that God commands Moses to tell the people what to do in preparation. Any big and important event requires sufficient preparation. What was the preparation of Klal Yisrael? Well, they had to wash their clothing, that husbands and wives had to be apart from each other for 3 days. And it says, the Pasuk says, in Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yut says, V'kidashtem hayom u'machar, that you must sanctify yourselves today and tomorrow. That was the commandment from Moses. And there were different things they had to do to sanctify themselves. So that's the pshat of the Pasuk. But says the holy Nesivo Shalom Solim Rebbe, that every Pasuk in the Torah has got the simple explanation of what it means, the nigla, the revealed understanding. But every Pasuk also has a nistar element to it, a hidden Kabbalistic message and meaning. What's the hidden message of this Pasuk? He says the Solim Rebbe that every human being is engaged in an epic struggle, that the Torah teaches us that all of us are made up of two parts. There are two parts to our being. There is the physical part, our body, and is the spiritual part, our soul. And every human being faces a huge struggle between those two parts of their being. The physical part wants to live a life of kina, taiva, kavod, of jealousy, of fulfilling our physical pleasures, of honor, of all the physical things that we pursue and desire, instant gratification. That's the goal, and that's the pull of the body. But we have another part to our being, and that's the soul. And the soul wants to overcome the lowliness of the body. And the soul wants to connect with God and with truth and with holiness and with eternity. And for most people in this world, the soul doesn't have a voice at all. In fact, the soul has very little bearing and say. And the body completely dominates and overpowers the soul, completely drowns it out, that there's not even that inner voice of the soul being heard. There's not even a struggle. Most people don't even know that there is a struggle between these two parts of our being, between the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara. If you're engaged in a battle and you don't even know that there is a battle, you've got no chance of winning. Your enemy is going to take you out very quickly. And that's what happens with most people, unfortunately, is the Yetzer Hara completely dominates, and they live in this world of kina, taiva, kavod, of jealousy, of physical desire, of the pursuit of honor, of chasing our appetites for power and for pleasure. Most people live in that headspace. But Jews are required to rise above that, to supersede that, to go beyond that. Says in the Nesivo Shalom, the secret to winning that war, the strategy that we need to employ is to v'kidashtem hayom u'machar, is this Pasuk in preparation for the receiving of the Torah, that sanctify yourselves today. Because what does the Yetzer Hara say? When a person wants to move, when a person wants to grow, when a person wants to take something on and develop spiritually, So the Yetzirah says, calm down. Don't be so rash. Why are you being such a fanatic? You want to take that on. You want to take the next step. Whether it's kashrus, whether it's Shabbos, whether it's dressing in a modest way, whether it's covering hair, whether it's learning Torah or davening in a minyan. A person knows that that's what they need to do, knows that's the next step in their growth. But the Yetzirah says, just settle down. And you want to do it, you'll do that tomorrow. But today, it's already late today. You had a late night last night. You enjoy yourself today. Just one more day of enjoying yourself, of following your desires and those pleasures. You don't have to cut them off just yet. You can do it tomorrow. That you'll do tomorrow. That is one of the main tactics that the Yetzirah employs against us. It says in the Siva Shalom that v'kidashtem hayom, that you must sanctify yourself today. When a person feels a sense of inspiration, when a person is moved by the moment, don't listen to the Yetzirah to delay it. Take on the next step immediately. Push that idea of the Yetzirah away and say, no. I'm going to do it now. I'm going to do it today. And that is the secret to spiritual growth, is that we need to, when we move, take it on immediately and don't push it away. And that's how we climb the spiritual ladder. That's how we develop and grow, and that's how we move past the Yetzirah. Because tomorrow is another day, and who knows what tomorrow brings. The Yetzirah knows it very well, that by cooling us down and pushing us off till tomorrow, so it's more than likely that we won't do this tomorrow. If we don't do it today, so we're not going to do it tomorrow. And so the key, the secret is v'kidashtem hayoyim, sanctify yourself today and take it on today. When I shared this Devar Torah with my family at Friday night dinner, my wife remembered a story of over 20 years ago. My wife's got an unbelievable memory. So my wife and I arranged a Arachim seminar in Cape Town. And we convinced somebody who was not observant but was partially connected to our community, a wonderful young man, to come to the Arachim seminar, a very intelligent person. And this person really enjoyed the material that was presented. They found it very sensible, very intellectually compelling. And there was a session about kashrus and about the animals that are kosher and how around the world, God says there are only four exceptions to the rules of kashrus and no more animals have been found, which is really one of the proofs that the Torah is divine. And this person said, well, you know what? I'm not ready to become kosher. And my wife said to this young gentleman, who's ever ready to become kosher? The time is now. And this person thought about it, and he said, you know what, you're right. And he said, okay, I'm now going to become kosher. And since then, since over 20 years ago, that individual's kosher, married a frum lady, and they're now living in Eretz Yisrael and living a frum life in Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem. But he saw that this is the moment. And my wife said, you can't lose the inspiration. You have to take it on now. And he did it. And the result was amazing spiritual growth. So that's the key. We can't fall for the Yetzirah and for the Yetzirah wanting to push us away from any spiritual inspiration and any moving forward. V'kidashtem hayom, we have to sanctify ourselves today. Tomorrow is another story. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
So let's continue with another beautiful message from Parshas Yisro, last week's Parsha. There was a very great Jew. His name was Rabbi Moshe Shearer. Rabbi Shearer was the head of Agudas Yisroel, which is the organization that represents religious Jews in the United States, in Israel. And Rabbi Shearer was involved in many important projects and had very strong diplomatic ties in the highest levels of government in the United States. And he was involved in many tremendous, incredible things throughout his career as the head of Agudas Yisrael. And at the end of his life, he fell ill, unfortunately. And after his illness was diagnosed, he was asked to speak. He had already been ill for a while, but he was asked to speak at a very prominent gathering in the United States. And he wrote his speech, but unfortunately he passed away before he could deliver the address. Rabbi Pesach Kron, who was very close to him and his family, he received a copy of that speech from his son, from Rabbi Moshe Shira's son. And he wrote the following thing. It says in Parshas Yisroi that Hashem clearly laid out the position of all of the Jewish people on Mount Sinai. And each individual had their place. And that's how it is in the Jewish people. We all have our role. We all have our position in the team called Klal Yisrael. And one had to stay in their position. And the Pasuk says, Kol hanogeh bahar mos yumas. Anybody who touches the mountain will die. In other words, if a person went beyond their position and went up higher than they were allowed to, so they would die. But Rav Moshe Shira says, another drush in the Pasuk, another explanation and reading of the verse, is that in our lives, we all have mountains to climb. We have aspirations. We have visions. We have dreams that we want to achieve. And to achieve those dreams is not simple. It's not easy. We have to apply ourselves. We have to work hard. Everybody knows to achieve anything in this world, you have to work really, really hard in any given field. And we shouldn't be deterred from climbing those mountains and from achieving our dreams. And if in the pursuit of those dreams, we touch the mountain and then we back off, so says Rabbi Shira, the Torah is telling us, Kohan nogea bahar mos yumas. If we just touch the mountain, but we don't actually climb that mountain, we don't actually continue to pursue our dreams and push hard and work hard until we reach the top of the mountain, we just touch the mountain and then are deterred by its peak and by the difficulty of the climb. So that's mos yumas. That's a life of death, that every individual needs to follow their dreams, needs to work hard to achieve their dreams, and needs to climb the mountain. And that is the pathway of success. And that's what the Torah is telling us. The Torah is hinting to us that that is the way to achieve in this world, is not just to touch the mountain, but rather to climb the mountain and work hard until we reach the top and achieve our dreams. Please stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Focus on Our Sages with Rabbi Danny Sackstein on 101.9 Chai FM.
Let's end off with a beautiful Maharal. The Maharal explains on the Pasuk in last week's Parshat Parshas Yisroel that says that Klal Yisrael arrived at the mountain, at Mount Sinai, Vit Yatsu Patachti Sahar. And they stood at the foot of the mountain. So Rashi says tachtis could mean at the bottom of the foot of the mountain, but it also means underneath the mountain, that they stood underneath the mountain, that Hashem was koifer ahar aleim kegigis, that Hashem held the mountain over them like a barrel. The Maharal in Gur Arya comments on this Rashi, which is a quote from the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Peiches. Maharal says, why was it necessary for Hashem to hold the mountain over the Jewish people? And he says that was required, that was necessary, because Hashem was showing the Jewish people that we have a compulsion to the Torah. In other words, the Torah is not just voluntary. The Torah is not just, you know, a nice thing, a luxury, that it would be nice if we follow the Torah. Okay, that's good. That's a cherry on top. That's a nice addition to our lives. That's not the case. Hashem held the mountain over Klal Yisrael to show them that if you keep the Torah, so you will be fulfilling your mission in this world. If you don't keep the Torah, Sham Tiyu Kevurascha, that over there you'll be buried. In other words, if we don't keep the Torah, we'll be buried spiritually. There's no choice. The only way for Klal Yisrael to live, the only way for Klal Yisrael to thrive, the only way for Klal Yisrael to fulfill its mission in this world is through the Torah. It's not just a nice addition to your life. It is your life. It is compelling. It is essential. And that really, says the Maharal, is the pathway, is the setup of any successful relationship. Unless we're in, and we're in all in and completely committed, there's no way we're going to succeed in anything. Unfortunately, today we often see that couples move in together and they live a life like they're a married couple. And then the woman speaks about marriage, the man says, whoever spoke about marriage, you know, whoever, you know, had any idea of marriage over here. So he gets all the benefits of marriage. She gives of herself entirely to him. And then he runs for the hills and when she asks for complete commitment. That's not the way a relationship works. That's not the way a relationship is going to succeed. Because in those circumstances, as soon as things get a little bit tough and a little bit trying, which of course they will, because that's life. Life's not just about the romance and the thrill of first meeting and the, you know, the music's playing and the wine is poured. That's the romance. That's not reality. That's a wonderful time, and that shows the couple how things can be if they do the work necessary on each of their realm of the relationship. But that's not reality. Reality is a grind. Reality is a struggle. Reality requires a lot of humility, a lot of hard work, a lot of giving and caring and providing for the needs of the other. That's the ingredient for a successful relationship. But only if you're fully in and committed are you going to do that. But if things start getting rough and tough and you're not fully committed, the person will run for the hills. So people that are not going, that's why couples must get married. They might, before they move in together, they must get married and be committed. And in order for the man to enjoy the privileges of marriage, the woman should only give herself to him when he agrees to marry her, when he agrees to a relationship, a lifelong relationship of complete commitment. And that's why we see so many relationships break down and so many people are heartbroken and are shattered and are devastated because they gave everything, but they didn't receive it in return. And it's quite ironic in our modern world where we have the feminist movement that claims that they fight for the rights of women. And we see in today's modern world, women are a great disadvantage because unless a woman gives herself fully to a man, he won't pursue the relationship further, but he still won't commit to the relationship. And so a woman is expected to give herself, but she doesn't get the commitment in return. And therefore, the way we conduct ourselves in religious society, in which there's no physical contact until marriage, is a much greater protection of a woman's dignity, of a woman's integrity, and of a woman's self-worth in the relationship. And so only when we're fully committed do we ever have a chance of the relationship working. And that's what marriage is. And that is the same, says the Maharal, in our marriage with God. That God required a complete commitment. He showed us that the Torah is a covenant in which we completely committed and we are compelled to keep the Torah. Without the Torah, we have no life, we have no existence, we have no spiritual future or spiritual or connection to eternity. That was the covenant at Mount Sinai. Hashem held the mountain over us to show that we're compelled. And there's another also beautiful reason the Maharal suggests. And he says that when a relationship is forced, the halacha is that there can't be a divorce. Hashem forced the relationship, so Hashem can never divorce us. Hashem is locked in to the relationship with us, and no matter how much we stray and how much we rebel and move away from Hashem, Hashem will never abandon us. He'll never divorce us because it was a forced relationship in the beginning. And so that's some of the wisdom behind the standing at Mount Sinai, Hashem holding the mountain over us, and the forging of the covenant for eternity between God and the Jewish people. Thank you so much for listening and have a wonderful day.